12 years after seizing the imperial throne, Paul Muad'Dib Atreides finds himself in a position of supreme irony. His jihad has claimed 61 billion lives, sterilized 90 planets, and completely demoralized 500 others. The former noble heir now rules as both emperor and religious figurehead, wielding unprecedented power through his monopoly on melange, the consciousness-expanding spice essential to space travel and longevity. Yet despite this absolute authority, Paul is increasingly trapped. His prescient visions have become a prison rather than a gift, forcing him to experience countless probable futures simultaneously. He can see the terrible consequences of his actions, but feels powerless to change them. The religious fervor he unleashed continues regardless of his wishes, a jihad conducted in his name that would persist even if he died. "The jihad would continue killing in my name even if I died trying to stop it," he confesses to Chani, his beloved Fremen concubine. This central paradox forms the novel's philosophical core: absolute power coupled with absolute constraint. Paul possesses abilities beyond any human in history, simultaneously the Kwisatz Haderach, a mentat, and a prescient oracle. Yet these very gifts trap him in a predetermined path. Imagine having perfect foresight, but watching helplessly as your actions lead to inevitable tragedy. This is Paul's burden: to know the future, yet remain powerless to substantially change it. His godhood has distanced him from his humanity, replacing simple joys with the suffocating weight of imperial and religious responsibility. Against imperial power, a sophisticated conspiracy forms to destroy Paul. This alliance unites former enemies: the Bene Gesserit, whose breeding program was derailed by Paul's emergence; the Spacing Guild, whose monopoly depends on his spice; the secretive Bene Toilax; and Princess Irulan, Paul's nominal wife, acting as their insider. They meet in a dome where Guild navigator Edric floats in a spice gas tank, his mutated form creating a blind spot, shielding them from Paul's prescience. The conspirators know direct attacks would transform Paul into a martyr, strengthening his empire. The Tlelaxu contribute a Gola of Duncan Idaho, Paul's former swordmaster, programmed to exploit Paul's emotional attachment. Meanwhile, Irulan secretly gives contraceptives to Chani, preventing her from bearing Paul's heir. It's a chess game where opponents manipulate the player rather than attacking the king directly. Each faction pursues its agenda within an uneasy alliance, proof that Paul's regime remains vulnerable to human ambition and institutional power. At the heart of Paul's dilemma lies the paradox of prescience. The more accurately he sees the future, the more trapped he becomes in fulfilling it. This manifests in his visions of Chani's death and childbirth, which he cannot prevent without triggering worse outcomes. To be prescribed is to be trapped by the vision of a single thread in an infinite weave, he tells Haight. Rather than a triumphant chosen one, Paul is a reluctant messiah, aware of prophecy's terrible cost. Recognizing his jihad has become an unstoppable mental epidemic spreading across the universe. This theme culminates when Paul refuses Skytale's offer to resurrect Chani as a Gola despite his overwhelming grief. There are some prices an Atreides cannot pay. His oracular power doesn't eliminate free will, but heightens the moral weight of each choice. Paul's tragedy stems not from lack of knowledge, but from knowing too much, seeing the inevitable price of every path. Identity manipulation forms a central theme explored through layers of deception. Face dancers, Tlelaxu creations who perfectly mimic others, create paranoia where even intimate relationships become suspect, as when one impersonates Othium's daughter. Paul recognizes the deception through subtle discrepancies, yet cannot act without triggering his foreseen catastrophic future. The Gola Haight presents a more nuanced exploration of identity. Created from Duncan Idaho's cells, he embodies a philosophical puzzle about consciousness. Physically identical to Duncan, but initially lacking his memories, questioning what truly defines a person. This theme climaxes when Haight recovers his identity as Duncan through a psychological breakthrough triggered by Paul's words, "We'll do what must be done." This resurrection represents the victory of essential human identity over technological manipulation. Herbert's exploration of authenticity feels remarkably prescient in our world of deepfakes and curated social media personas, suggesting something fundamental in human identity resists sophisticated control attempts. Herbert's sharpest critique targets the fusion of religion and politics. The novel depicts Paul's religion transformed into a tool of imperial control, with the Khazari priesthood enforcing orthodoxy through violence. What began as Fremen spiritual practices has become a galaxy-spanning cult demanding absolute devotion. Korba exemplifies this corruption, evolving from rough Fremen commander to bejeweled panegyrist orchestrating Muad'Dib's worship. His transformation represents the broader degradation of spiritual authenticity. Alia's temple in Arakeen appears artificially aged to manufacture historical legitimacy. Inside, acolytes mechanically chant praises describing Alia as a divine protector who rides the sandworm of space. Empty performances divorced from genuine spirituality. Jessica articulates Herbert's central warning. Government cannot be religious and self-assertive at the same time. Eventually, all governmental functions tend to act as if they were divine revelations. This reflects Herbert's deep skepticism about theocracy as a tool for political control. Herbert portrays the crucial transformation of Fremen culture from a harsh desert existence that forged spiritual toughness to one corrupted by imperial power. Paul encounters former Fremen who've abandoned austere values for wealth and status, once wise knives now hedonistic pleasure seekers adorned in silk and jewels. Othim's house lacks traditional wall hangings, likely sold as authentic artifacts to wealthy pilgrims. Water symbolism underscores this transformation. The novel opens with Paul contemplating Dune's paradox, a world transformed by the very water that once made its people unique. Increasing moisture threatens sandworms and the spice cycle, potentially destroying the foundation of Fremen life. When blinded, Paul rejects the tradition of abandoning the blind to the desert, providing Trelaxu eyes instead. His final act, walking blindly into the desert, represents his embrace of authentic Fremen spirit, transforming from political ruler to eternal spiritual figure. As Dune Messiah concludes, Paul walks blindly into the desert, physically sightless, yet guided by prescience, embodying the novel's central paradox of a man who sees everything yet remains trapped by that sight. His departure marks both defeat and transcendence, choosing free will over deterministic prophecy. Paul's twins, Leto II and Ganema, offer hope. Born with full consciousness from the spice saturating Chani's body, they represent beings who might find paths even the Kwisatz Haderach cannot see. "You have your father's eyes, Leto," Paul tells his son, "but your grandfather's mouth. Your awareness is your weapon." Herbert warns about messianic leadership dangers through Paul's tragedy, revealing how well-intentioned power corrupts when filtered through institutions. The jihad that claimed 61 billion lives began with Paul's desire to avenge his father and protect the Fremen. Herbert's vision illuminates contemporary power dynamics. The greatest danger isn't villains, but heroes who justify any means for righteous ends. Paul's journey from liberator to reluctant tyrant shows how power transforms both its wielder and society.